Yeah, as you know, I'm very much in favor of the pizza effect. I've heard the story a little bit different, that there was always an Italian, classical Italian pizza, which is actually the same as the Turkish pide and the Greek pizza. This is flat bread without anything on it. And then they added a little bit of tomato and whatever because they were poor. And then they got rich, some of the immigrants in America, and they started to pile more stuff on it. It became better and better and more tasty. And then at a certain point, of course, it returns to Italy and becomes the icon of Italian cooking, which is interesting because that's the nice kind of pizza effect, that what comes out of it, what everybody now has the idea of something originally Italian, even the Italian's idea of original Italian, does not resemble very much the very dry original pizza. And it may be the same with yoga, for example. That's what the analogy is about. The original Indian yoga might actually not be very interesting, but what it has become in the interaction with the West is much more juicy and tasty and interesting and rich, which has happened often, it seems, in the history of meditation, going from one culture to another.
It's very interesting what's going on now, because now we are constructing stories about pizza and pizza. But we need those kind of constructions.
So something happens, but sometimes it might be very interesting and actually very constructive.
I think Buddhism is a very interesting phenomenon. And of course, I am 20% Buddhist. And after traveling around the Dharma for many years, I'm up to 28%. But that also set me free to ask a lot of crazy questions.
I'm thinking of the East, of the Christian traditions of the East, of the Orthodox Church, especially of the Hermit movement in Egypt, you know, the Desert Fathers. I think they had very much the same kind of, they would laugh at some of the things, or they would have recognized the search, which I think also the Western mindfulness is kind of searching without dedicating yourself to, in the case of locked into a kind of position where you don't want to be locked into anything today. A lot of people want to be able to move or freely as a bee in a way. But for sure, the monks of the Orthodox tradition, or the Western monks, had this. Moving into the desert, not to escape people, but they went there to encounter God so that they could meet others in a different way. And in fact, they became so busy, as this one of us we heard here, because then they were sought as experts, as counselors. So the idea of meditating just for yourself is a strange idea. I think that may be the one thing that needs correction. Don't meditate for yourself. You don't pray.
The Hermes was not
Hermes.
And it's very interesting in Tibet. There are still a lot of Hermes. But in the regions, they always talk about Hermes. And they sometimes go and visit them. Because it's a way of constitute an identity to know that we are here for. And you're very right that this film could have been made in Europe. But for me, it's much more interesting to go to the UK. Very parallel.
I was thank you very much for some very interesting. I'd like to ask a question about. How religion and the imagination is related. Because here in the West, when we speak about religion and coping, for example, Kent Hagelin, he has all these ways of looking at religion as a system of significance, creation of meaning. And when you show us this film, it seems to me that. Totally different way of orientation in the concept of religion. It's not so interesting as a system of significance. But my question is, yes, how do you think about what do you think about the ways?
I can tell you my own story, maybe not. And that was that after interviewing these 100 torture survivors, they all talk about spirituality
when I asked the next question, I couldn't answer. Because it was kind of the embodiment. So it was very difficult to interview people about these things. So I get a permission from the Soulmaster Alliance to interview high masters, lamas. And that even got it worse, because they have too many words and too many texts to refer. So it was very, very difficult to open up what's actually happening there. And then I talked to some Western Buddhists who have been immigrating to Tibet or North India. And they, and there's made two anthropological fields works about it. And very interesting because, first of all, they think, the Westerners, we have to learn Tibetan language. And that they do. After 7 years, they speak it fluently. They can even read it. But they cannot get into discussion with people. Why? And to say very simple, Buddhism consists of three parts. A text. But not a text like we have. It's a text who has to be written in a ritual. So there's a practice and a text. And that should not be separate. But that practice has to be guided by the master. So there's the text, there's the practice, and there's the master. The relationship. And these three parts are important to understand just a little bit about what's going on. So when I think, thought that now I have to translate what's going on, this is not the words. And that was the reason that I started using Hebrew, because you could not write down the verse in that way. You could not write what they had in there, because there's so much body and soul and much more documenting to do. As we are in the, when we are doing science today, we are in a strange land country. Human society. Words, and
questions in the back.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. Just to introduce, I'm Karen Vistrup from the Danish University of Education. So I'm coming from quite another context, from the health education context. I'm so happy to hear your presentation. And it was very nice to hear about that question to you about what are your concepts of health, what do you define health. My field is, I do research in the field of health education, health promotion, and philosophy of health pedagogy. So then I'm always very interested in concepts of health. And I've been working with the Eskimos during around the polar circle in Greenland and other areas, and I can recognize a lot of so many similar things from my field and there are two different places in the world. But now to my question: have you in your interviews have you been aware of their concept of health? Do they have a concept of health? No. But what is
the
good
thing they can, if I really press them, they can say, sharp in mind.
Sharp in mind, yes. But then, a little broader, what is a good life?
Have you read the book, The Art of Happiness?
No, I'm so sorry.
It is the book that somebody started around the world. And it was written in that way that there was a Canadian psychiatrist who made this diagram for every day for a couple of weeks. And he wrote the impression I received in this book, 900 pages. And the editor took out half of it. So it's very difficult to understand what is hell. Because most of it, what we read, is produced in this different landscape.
And with all these words, as you said, you said about how do we do so many words?
Yeah.
We have so many reflections on going so.
But the Tibetan people are very nice, so they try to. That's my question.
Yeah, of course.
May I end the last?
Yes.
There is Madhugal. He's a famous psychoanalyst in France, very nice, and she was joining one of the life and mind meetings. And she had to present the psychoanalytic view of the world. And the day before, there had been a very intensive seminar with mathematics from Western, geochemics and neurophysiology. And Dalai Lama could almost tolerate, and he was very engaged in the discussion of different kinds of having his meaning of mathematical problems. But after 10 minutes talk of George McDougall, Dalai Lama said, I'm sorry, I have to stop you. I do not understand anything. And she was a little shocked. And then she started once more, very pedagogical. And Dalai Lama was very specific in my opinion. So Western psychology, this is our pizza.
I think we need to end.